Good morning, everyone. I just had a thought that I'll share with you, which is not necessarily about this particular talk, but as I was listening from 9:45 on to the chants that were done before we even came out here, and then to the music that's sung and the readings, Steve's fabulous reading from Whispers, just so perfect. I thought it would be so nice for those of you who come and keep coming, if before service, sometime in the week before, you actually read the reading. Because everything that happens in service, from the minute the chants start, because these people have read the reading, and they know what chants they want to do, and they know what reading from Whispers, and what music, and it would be very nice for you to have that advantage that we have. I know what the reading is. And I'm sitting here getting so deeply inspired by what everybody else is doing. So I'm just making that as a suggestion. This book that we read from, Rays of the One Light, everybody could have a copy and just read the reading before you come. By the time the light bearer stands up here to give the sermon, you will already be so uplifted and your heart will be open, and you'll probably even know right where we're going to go with these talks. This is a very profound reading today. Another thought that I had last night when I read it was, oh, I wish I could just be a fly on the wall in all of the different Anandas all over the world so that I could see which thread everyone who's speaking about it picks it up with. There's so much in the reading, and it's tricky. I mean, it's basically saying, yes, we perceive darkness, but this light's always shining. And it says, in fact, both the light and the dark is in each of us, and there's much more to it. That part of it, though, reminded me of a cartoon that I once heard quoted, a Peanuts cartoon. So the first little square is Lucy. And Lucy's there saying, I hate everyone. I just hate everyone. I hate the whole world. And Charlie Brown comes in and he said, I thought you had inner peace. And she said, I do, but I have outer obnoxiousness too. But it's true. It's true for all of us that we have both the light and the dark. And we have all of that within us captured so beautifully there. Yesterday, I taught a class on affirmations. And, of course, the very point that I was just making about the readings and the music and is true about whatever we're teaching here. So it would be impossible for me to not have noticed how applicable so much of what we spoke about in those 3 hours yesterday is to today. On Friday, when I was preparing for that Saturday class, I thought, how do I want to approach this today or tomorrow? What inspiration is there that would be unique? And the first thing that came to me is that before we would want to choose to do affirmations, we would have to somehow become aware that there is some other way we could be living, that there's something else that could come to us in life. And we would have to have a desire to be living differently than how we are. Otherwise, why would anybody think to sit down and write an affirmation? An affirmation, of course, is a statement of our highest potential. And the affirmation itself says the truth. Whether we ourselves have realized that truth in this life or not is of no significance. It's still as true for us as it will be the day we realize it. But many of the affirmations that we say, of course, when those of us who use them, we're aware that we're maybe not quite there, but then the whole experience of affirmation says, don't even let that thought in. Just state this like it is absolute truth. Well, when I was thinking about why anybody would want to do that, I thought to myself, there's no place to start with this class, with this lesson, but to be talking about consciousness. Consciousness being that which is everything, that which is really undefinable, because everything else is defined by it and through it. So if we just start with everything is consciousness, and that God, that all-pervading, all-present force, applied a vibration to consciousness, which turned it into a thought when it was vibrating in a very fine way, and then the thought vibrates at a little larger frequency, if you will. The vibration becomes a little more obvious, and it becomes energy, and then energy vibrates in various ways and becomes matter. And what happens to us is that we are born over and over and over as our soul is trying to find its way back to the pure light that was defined in our reading, back to being pure love, pure bliss. It just keeps taking all of these different bodies and having all of these different experiences to get there. Yesterday, the analogy came to me that it's very much like taking a trip cross-country. You start in New York, your goal is San Francisco. You go a little ways, you stop in a hotel, you spend the night, you get up the next day, you get back in the car, you go a little further, you go into another hotel. Maybe one night you actually camp, so you have a very different experience. All the while, you're headed to San Francisco. And eventually, you will get there. So that's very much like this journey that our souls are on. We're headed somewhere. But as we come back in each life, we come back with predispositions, with tendencies, we're just programmed, and very deeply programmed, not in a way, I was going to say in a way, but we actually come in with all of this programming, and it sets us in a particular direction, and we all have some of it. We can talk about maybe somebody comes in and they're just by nature very generous. Maybe they're very loving. Maybe they're filled with self-doubt. Maybe they're greedy. Whether there are expansive qualities that we really are very grateful that we have, or those qualities that are holding us back, we come in with them. And what happens, and this is where the notion of darkness comes in, is that we believe that's who we are. We actually see ourselves. We've heard Swami Kriyananda talk about all of our self-definitions, some of them very simple. I'm a woman, so I was mentioning yesterday that when I grew up, little girls did not play sports. That gives you some idea of how old I am. But we just didn't. Now, so I never really learned to play any sports. I wasn't out there playing softball or basketball. But that didn't make it a truth, but I saw myself as someone who couldn't be physically active. I've told many of you that when I was 16 and I wanted to go to medical school, I was told I really shouldn't go to medical school, better I should be a nurse. Another thing that was very much the sign of the times, women in my day, girls, if you will, we became nurses or teachers. A lot of us did. And I just believed that. But what happens if we fast forward many years later and I wind up graduating from medical school? Well, or happening to be somebody who's very physically active now. It just shows us that what we take to be as the truth. These, of course, are simple examples. I mean, my becoming a physician wasn't simple, but it wouldn't have mattered if I'd become anything. The point is, we believe so many things about ourselves that are simply not the truth. And we're inclined in those directions. So that if we're somebody who comes in with self-doubt or with feeling that the world is a hard place to be, that's how we perceive so many of our experiences. I've heard Asha talk about this. She has a great analogy where she talks about, imagine a marble on a board. And if the board's tilted this way, whenever you put the marble on there, i.e. whenever you have an experience in life or a desire, that marble tilts in the direction of the board. That's her analogy. It tilts in the direction that we are inclined or predisposed until we develop an awareness that it doesn't have to be that way, that we can actually straighten that board out, that we can find a way to put the marble on the proverbial board and that it will stay right in the center, that it will stay still. And as we develop an awareness that we are not who we think we are. Remember, energy is neither created nor destroyed, but it can always be transformed. However we're seeing ourselves is not the whole picture. The light shineth, but the darkness comprehended it not. Now the beauty of all of this is that the very nature of a spiritual path, not just Ananda, but of any spiritual path, is that it is going to take us to that place which is light. Eventually, Master says, delusions of many lifetimes can be dispelled in a moment with the right thought. We have no idea how powerful it is when we think negative thoughts. One negative thought can just turn us completely in the wrong direction for years, for lifetimes. And of course, he goes on to say, we're not all prepared to do that, but we should all be trying. Every time a negative thought comes, I can't, I won't, I don't know how to. No, little girls don't play ball. No, I could never be a physician. There's no truth in that. They're figments of our imagination. Every single thing except the truth, which is light, which is all pervasive, which is anything and everything we want to be, it's ours already. Everything else is simply a figment of our imagination. Nothing else that we believe about ourselves is the truth, and we can change it. When we were talking about affirmations yesterday, I was going through an affirmation with them. And so I have two of them up on my refrigerator at home. And the one I chose to do was, which many of you will know, I go forth in perfect faith in the power of the omnipresent good to bring me what I need when I need it. I go forth in perfect faith in the power of omnipresent good to bring me what I need at the time I need it. But I didn't go through the whole affirmation yesterday like that. I said, what happens to us even when we say the words perfect faith? We just say those words, feel it. It's so uplifting. It's so expansive. We say omnipresent good. It's remarkable just feeling what happens. Everything about us can be transformed. This reminded me of when I was in Italy this past fall. We went to a place called Laverna. And there's a lot about Laverna that I could talk about, and a lot about St. Francis, but it's a beautiful place. It's where Francis spent a lot of time in his later life, and you feel that vibration there. But also, there's a huge amount of exquisite art at Laverna, and there's a particularly a large amount of art that was done by one particular artist whose name is Della Robbia. I didn't know that artist before I got there, but as soon as I walked into these various temples, I was struck by the beauty of his art. And Jyotish, who was leading that trip with Devi and other people, said to me, when you get to the Della Robbia, which was in another, we weren't standing there then, that is his depiction of the Annunciation. He said, spend time with it. He said, years ago I was here, and one of the brothers said to him, look at this piece. Look how perfectly the artist, Della Robbia, captured on Mary's face everything she was going through in the moment when Gabriel appeared to her and said, she was being given the choice because she had to act through free will, of course. So she was being given this choice about whether she would receive pure light, about whether she would give birth to the Son of God. Well, when you look at this sculpture, you know, it's done in this ceramic glaze. It's actually an art form that died out when he died because it was complicated enough at the time that nobody else could recreate it with the same beauty. But he was so masterful. You look at her and she's there and you see how hard it is. Here was Mary, for Mary to choose light. You see her confusion, her sense of, am I capable of doing this that is being asked of me? And yet at the same time, you see the light that is God beginning to come forth from her, not in the form of the Christ child, but that she's having this realization, and you watch it on her face. It's indescribably magnificent, and it shows us just how hard it is, because this is Mary, to make these choices, to let go of everything that we hold so strong to, how much we are attached to our self-limitations. It's very hard. There's that wonderful saying, change is not made without inconvenience, even from worse to better. And it's absolutely the truth. We have to bring everything we have to this. We have to first have the awareness that there's someplace else we could go in life, some other way we could be living, that we need not suffer anymore, ever, were we to make the choice. All suffering is a choice. That's exactly what it is. If we always choose perfect faith in omnipresent good, if we always decide, my other affirmation, within me lies the energy to accomplish all that I will to do. Behind my every act is God's infinite power. All we need to do is keep reminding ourselves everything is possible. We don't have to suffer. And even more than that, where I started 10 or 15 minutes ago, even what we've perceived as suffering is being informed by the light. The light never goes anywhere. The light cannot be dispelled by the darkness. Darkness is dispelled by the light. We just have to open our proverbial eyes and be willing to look at it. We need to see that whatever happens in this world, as hard as it might be, whether we're sick, whether we fail an important exam, when the fires come or the floods come, that we are inextricably on our way back to the light. To know without a doubt that the light will always be victorious. It has to be. It's the nature of the soul's journey. It's why we're here. We just need to awaken to it, moment by moment. Last week, after Devarshi gave a beautiful service here last week, and he referred to not a story, but Master's way of explaining light from the autobiography of a yogi. And I knew the chapter that it was in. So this week, I went back and I read the chapter. It's called The Law of Miracles. It's an amazing chapter. In it, Master talks about what light really is scientifically. Now remember, this is when he was writing the AY, so it was in the 30s and early 40s. I mean, so everything, so much was just being discovered. I mean, about light and about atoms and about electrons. It was a very different time, although there's a paragraph in the AY. I brought it out to read it to you, but I won't interrupt myself right now, but I won't say it nearly as well as he does, where he says, don't be fooled. In God's plan, he is giving these scientists the awareness to make these discoveries exactly as in the moment that man becomes ready to hear it and to know it. So there are no accidents here at all. But in that same chapter, Master tells a story of he was meditating in his home on Garpar Road, and all of a sudden, he experienced himself as being the captain on a ship that was hit by a shell. The First World War was going on at the time. And he was the captain, and he was thrown overboard with a few other people who lived through that. He was having this vision, but it was a true experience for him. And he swam to shore, but as he got on shore, he was hit by, he says, a random or stray bullet hit him. And he was dying. He was aware of his body, but it just felt like a numb experience all around him. He was in the process of dying. And as he was realizing that he was dying, all of a sudden, he found himself sitting back in a lotus posture in his room. And he just got so happy. He said, I was just so joyous, and I was celebrating that I was still in my body, and I was still alive. And all of a sudden, he was back in the soldier's body again. And he was dying again. And when he came back from that meditation, he was yelling at God, what is the truth here? Am I living or am I dead? And basically then God speaks to him and he says, of course you're neither. This is all a play of light. You aren't that dying soldier and you're not this living boy meditating in lotus posture. It's all a play of light with the shadows. And just like Devarshi said last week, when he, let me see if I can pull this up, when he said that Master said after sitting in a movie theater, and he said, you see the movie, and you know that whatever you're seeing on that screen is simply a play of light coming from that projector. He said, it's exactly what life is. Life is nothing other than a play of light. And someday we will know it is no more real. But while we're on our way to that, in our language we would say from the darkness that is at the base of our spine to the light that's here, the journey, what we're looking to accomplish in this lifetime, we have to keep choosing the light. The choice is ours. We know it's there for us. It's just like when St. Anthony had that final experience in the desert where he was in a cave. After all those years in a desert, calling to God, and the walls literally start crumbling in on him, and the animals that have been painted and carved into the walls take live form and start attacking him. And he remembers to scream out for Christ, and Christ appears to him. And then he says to him, where have you been all this time that I've been calling you? And Jesus says, Anthony, I was always with you. The light is always shining. We need to simply keep making this choice to turn ourselves in the direction We need to find the energy. We need to remember that everything will work out well if we make the right decisions, but moment by moment, and they're always right in front of us. The other image that I had when I was thinking about this is what happens to our pupils? Our pupils, our eye pupils. We've been in a dark room, our eyes adjust, we see, we think everything, we see as much as somebody can see in a dark room. And then we step out into the light or somebody turns on the light. And what happens? It's painful. Our pupils have to constrict. We can't bear that much light. The darkness doesn't like the light. It doesn't like to be exposed. And there's a lot of reasons for us to hold on to those places. But we each have to ask ourselves, would we choose to keep living that way when Master assures us over and over and over that all the decision is ours? All we need to do is turn in the direction, and we will find over and over just exactly what Steve read today. The light never goes anywhere. Master's wonderful, it's hard to call it a saying or a quote, isn't it? Because just what he spoke one day that somebody realized as genius. A room can be in darkness for thousands of years, but the instant you turn on a light, the darkness disappears. You can't analyze the darkness. You can't process with the darkness. You can't scream at it. You can't beat it up. You can't wish it away. You have to go and find the light source. And the instant you turn on the light, the darkness disappears.